This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario, and right now I'm sitting across the Great Eight Hall of Change inductee. Let me get it right, Gerard Jeter.
Yes, sir, Gerard Jeter.
Mm-hmm. All right, got to get it right. I don't want to disrespect the man.
No, it's okay,
bro. Right to his face. Where you from, bro?
Born and raised in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Grandparents raised me in the Notorious Housing Project, finished P.T. Barnum.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I spent about a good, the early part of my years, I say about a good 18, 19 years in P.T. Barnum being raised by my grandparents and my mom.
Okay. Can we get their names, please? Because we got to give them credit.
Yeah, James Jeter is my grandfather. May his soul rest in peace. Mildred Jeter was my grandmother. May her soul rest in peace. And my mother's Wanda Jeter.
All right. They did the best they can with what they
Absolutely.
Had.
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
There's certain things that we carry around in life when we're trying to make a tough decision. Now that it sounds now better now than it did at 18.
Absolutely.
What's one thing that Papa Jeter would say or do that comes to mind when times get a little shaky now?
If you want to change your circumstances, educate yourself, because that's something no one can take from you.
Wow.
That's something I didn't understand when I was a young man coming up. But as an adult and going through my own trials and tribulations and understanding things in society, I truly get the message he was installing in me at that time as a young man.
Mm.
That's something that cannot be taken away from you and also will assist you in changing your situation, et cetera, education.
He was your father figure or an example of a male in your house?
He was more than a father figure to me. And now that he's no longer here in a physical form, he's my guardian angel. At a young age, I was diagnosed with cancer. I had to have my right kidney removed to a Wilms tumor. And this man took on the role to get me to Yale Hospital every day, get me through my chemotherapy sessions, and allow me to experience this thing called life. Without him being present in my life at that time, I truly don't believe I would be sitting here today.
Hmm.
And those who know my grandfather, Silver Fox from P.T. Barnum, know exactly the storyline and understand our relationship.
Okay. All right. Can you divulge a little bit?
Yeah, it was just, again, at a young age, 4 or 5 years old, this was an older man who had 11 children of his own, but I became his baby. And anybody in the city of Bridgeport knew, wherever you seen Mr. Jeter, you seen me. At that time, he gave me the nickname Magoo. Because I was always a little kid with a little big head and resembled a cartoon character, but always was wise for my age. That's one thing I can say was accredited to me. He put that name on me, Magoo, that lasted with me throughout my life. And again, just a polarizing figure in my life.
Mm. Good foundation to have.
Absolutely. Given the circumstances and the environment
the circumstances,
we was
raised in. Yeah, yes. We're going to get there and we'll get there in a few. We can talk a little bit about Grandma Jeter and...
Grandma was a librarian at Reed Elementary School for over 30 years. She retired as a librarian, a strong black woman, raised her kids well, growing up in the inner city, stressed to us about unity, family, supporting one another, being there for one another, fed the community, was involved in, all type of events throughout the community, love throughout the project facility. Just a good all-around woman, and I love my grandmother dearly. And it's funny because one of my daughters just resemble her so much. Even my aunt said it when she was born, like, that's Mildred all over again. So, yes.
It works like that. And then yes, your mom, Wanda?
Wanda, beautiful mom. I can't say enough. Devoted, dedicated, driven. The type of woman who will give you the shirt off her back. Even to this day, still out in the community, giving back, uplifting others, and offering opportunities for everyone, others to elevate their life.
Hmm. We got house rules, then there's the street rules, and then there's larger society, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I call it the white man rules, my business
and
rules.
You better abide by it.
Where did the street rules overtake? And what was the allure? Was it the money, the status?
I would say growing up, and again, if you anyone do their history in the early 90s, P.T. Barnum, again, was a notorious project, infested with crack cocaine, heroin, prostitution, you name it, the whole gamut. And as a young man, yes, inside the apartment we were in with the discipline with grandma and granddad, you understood the structure. But when that door opened up and you stepped outside, you were subject to the negative activities that were taking place. And I must say, as a young man, when I got about 12 or 13, 14 years old, there wasn't really too much my elder grandparents can say and do outside of, you know, the normal stuff of having a curfew and things of that nature. But while I'm outside, you know, roaming with friends and stuff like that, the temptation of seeing the fast cars, the beautiful cars, the women attracted to these individuals who were, you know, pimps and hustlers in the inner city, the community. These were the celebrities, so to speak, back then. And just seeing them, you know, being able to give out money to us kids and do store runs and sometimes put us in the car, take us downtown to what we used to call the Hi-Ho Center down in downtown Bridgeport, buy me sneakers and clothes just for, you know, letting them know when the police is coming and things of that nature. You gravitate to those things. You gravitate to your environment. You gravitate to what you see. And money was readily accessible for these individuals. But yet when I go inside the house, I see granddad and grandma struggling just to keep food on the table. And I guess that nurturing instinct or that, you know, just wanting to provide for the family, that instinct kicked in. You know, I could get out here and make a few dollars and help grandma and granddad and help my younger brother and family members, et cetera. And I must say, the fact that I was educated was a benefit because...
The gift and the curse.
Exactly. Because with that education, instead of applying it to something positive, I applied it to something negative, and it took me, it elevated me in what we call the game. So much to the point to where the elevation landed me on the federal government radar. And I don't want to sit here and sound like I'm glorifying that.
No,
that was the reality.
We're not going to get there because the system is made to elevate you and spit you out.
Absolutely.
In the wrong direction. But let's talk a little bit about when was the turning point? When was the click? Because we got to fail a couple of times. Or did you fail once? And
I failed once. Through the blessings of God, I can say it only took one time for me to experience the penal system to know that that wasn't for me. Again, as I stated earlier, my introduction into the game, air quotes, started at about 14, 15 years old, up until I was about 20. So you say about a good 6 to 5 year interaction with, again,
The life,
which ultimately elevated me to a position of, how you say, having people underneath me, lieutenants and so on and so forth, and distributing illicit substances throughout the project.
Like I said, we don't want to even get into all that because that is not
behind us now.
That's behind us.
Absolutely.
What was the point that clicked for you that I'm going to do different?
I found myself sentenced to 10 years. When that judge stated to me, we now turn you over to the Department of Corrections, I didn't know what to expect. Young man, first time, alone, and not knowing if I was going to make it out or make it back home. 10-year sentence at 19, 20 years old. After about 8 months of being incarcerated, sitting on my bunk watching the news, all my peers and friends, a 63 federal indictment took place. That was wicked to me. It scared me because I knew at any given moment the federal government was going to knock on this door and say, come with us, because we know you were associated with these individuals as well. That never happened. What did happen, though, is that my first daughter was born. my brother, my baby brother, through my mom. I have other siblings, but my younger brother with my mother passed away in a car accident. My grandmother, the one I spoke about so highly earlier, passed away as well. So my daughter being born, first daughter being born while incarcerated on March 17th, which she is now my lucky charm, because again, as I stated, I was told as a young man I wouldn't be able to have kids as a result of my cancer and my surgery. So I was always under the impression that I could not have kids. And lo and behold, my daughter was born while incarcerated on March 17th as my lucky charm. Losing my brother, losing my grandmother, towards the end of my sentence, I was able to get a furlough. And I went to go see my grandmother. And all my family members greeted me there and stated that she was not going to know who you are. She's dealing deeply with dementia and she's on her way out. But I tell you, Jose, I'm going to say something to you, man. When I went in that room and called my grandmother's name and she turned around in that wheelchair, she lit up like a Christmas tree. She smiled. She knew it was me. That was my last encounter with my grandmother before going back into the prison system. That was my aha moment. Those three situations that transpired while being incarcerated let me know this is not for me and I needed to get back out in society and be a father to my child and a family member to my family and be that man I was raised to be.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. We are speaking with the Great Eight Hall of Change inductee for 2025, Jerron Jeter from the city of Bridgeport, sharing his story. That aha moment clicks for us, and we have like a moment of clarity that we want to do different. What is one thing that you wanted to do different right away?
I said to myself as I was preparing and getting prepared to be released to a halfway house, I think that was one of the best blessings that ever happened to me because they don't do this nowadays. I was sent to the halfway house for an 18-month stint. So I was able to stay in Maple Street Halfway House on the east side of Bridgeport for that period of time, which was close to 2 years, which allowed me to work. So you couldn't spend your money. You had to turn in your checks. They saved all your money for you. So once you depart, you had a nice piece of change for you to get back in society, to get on your feet. After doing that 18 months in the halfway house, successfully completing that halfway house, I was able to get out. And my moment of giving back with clarity was just more so saying, you know what? I think I caused enough harm with my previous actions. And now is the time to give back and uplift and show young men and women that if I can make a change and a difference in life, they can too. So I was blessed enough to open up a unisex barbershop on Fairfield Avenue in Bridgeport, which allow young men and women to come in and get their hair cut and get their hair braided and things of that nature. But we did a little, we went above a little more ahead. We were helping them with their homework, mentorship, Big Brother, you know, donation, clothes donation, et cetera, things of that nature. I was using the shop as a way to give back to the community. And it's funny how God works because while giving back to the community, a young man came in and, you know, fresh out of barber school and wanted to, you know, get an opportunity to cut hair. I gave him that opportunity. Let him know, you know what, it's a table here for you to, you know, get out of trouble, stay out of trouble. Because I know from my own personal experiences, give you an opportunity to come out here, start your business, get your hair cut, learn your skills and build your clientele up. And again, unbeknownst to me how God worked, about 6 months after him working at the shop, he came to me and said, you know, I want to introduce you to my dad. You know, you're such a, you know, role model, man. You're always giving back. You're doing good. I told my dad all about you. I want to introduce you to him. I said, well, who's your father? And he stated to me, my father's name is Roger Sherman. At the time, I didn't know. I said, okay, I'll stop by. But I found out Roger Sherman ran houses that housed young men who were ward of the state, that were abused and neglected from the state, but he gave them a shelter room and was, you know, allowed them opportunity to be housed in a safe place. And he had a number of these houses and things of that nature throughout Bridgeport. So I went to meet his father and sat down and we went over everything. And he said he heard a lot about me. One thing led to another. He said, listen, young man, I don't know if you know or not, but you are an inspiration for a lot of young kids in the inner city. I would like to offer you a case manager job. Now, I was kind of skeptical because I'm running my business, but at the same time, I'm looking at, okay, well, this is another opportunity to earn another stream of income while still giving back. And I have to say, after about 3 to 4 years of working under Roger Sherman and the Roger Sherman House and working with the young youth, I knew right then and there that's where my passion lied. It was nothing like having a young man come to you and say, thank you for being there for me. Thank you for supporting me. Thank you for allowing me to see things for what they are and get on the right path in life. And it was so more than fulfilling, more than the pay, more than anything, to know that God using me to give back to the next generation. And the rest is history.
Wow. Having a great foundation to begin with is kind of easier to bounce back, but the temptation is there. So many good things happen. A lot of people fall back during that period that they're in the halfway house, between the halfway house and society. Why didn't you fall back at that moment? Because you know that's the toughest.
Yes, it is. And I must say, having a strong support system is what allowed me to see my way through. Again, I mentioned my mother, my siblings, my other siblings, my cousins. I come from a large family throughout the state of Connecticut, not just the city of Bridgeport. And I was always that kid, again, like I told you, who was granddad's shadow. So I was always around all the older men in the neighborhood, and I always knew them, and I had that older wisdom in me. That's where, again, the Magoo come from. And they always just knew a respect thing for my grandfather. Like, listen, we know you're different. Not to mention, again, I didn't touch on this, but I was a star basketball player at my high school, prom king, very popular, very well known in the city. So people knew. And I guess what they say, people see things in yourself that you don't see within your own self. They knew. Jail is not for you. You have so much more to offer. You're a bright, educated young man. And that support system allowed me to see my way through. And I encourage anyone who might find themselves in that situation, build your support network. Even if it may not be family, whether it's NA, AA, Big Brother, mentorship, support groups, whatever's out there that's going to benefit you, latch on to it to keep you focused.
There's an issue with listening. Yeah. For those at home, he's rolling his eyes because he knows that. So you know where I'm going with this.
Absolutely.
What is that the difference between the people who make it and the people who go back?
I would say my conscience is what weighed on me. My grandmother would always tell me when I would come in the house, when I was ripping and running, money everywhere, and so on and so forth. Boy, you're going to jail backwards. And again, as a young man blinded by the money and the lifestyle, it was in one ear and out the other. But God created us in a unique way. He gave us 2 ears and 1 mouth for a reason. And I'm learning this now as a parent, that although you talking, they may act like they don't hear you, I heard my grandmother. And it was only when I found myself on that metal plate where her voice and my conscience would play in my head, boy, you're going to jail backwards. And I had to understand what she was saying with a reality check. So again, 2 ears and 1 mouth for a reason. Although people may act like they don't hear you, they hear you.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario. This is Derod Jeter from the city of Bridgeport. Great 8 Hall of Change, inductee 2025, one of the 8 people recognized for their work, returning citizen, giving back to his community 18 times more than what he used to do in damage. Proud to say. As you now, you have nailed the basic mentorship things that you need to do. One is give them a little bit of attention.
Yes, sir.
even if you feel they're not listening, still speak your truth.
Yes, sir.
Are these some of, what else do you go with, do you use in your role as an advocate right now for these young men?
Well, at this point, I am a medicated assisted treatment specialist. I'm a certified alcohol and drug counselor. And I am a counselor within the Department of Corrections. I've been working in the Department of Correction for 12 years now. As a result of me giving back to the community and building my resume with Roger Sherman, and again, giving back and being known throughout the community for giving back, I was able to be recognized by a young lady in one of the residential programs I would go and facilitate groups in. She pulled me to the side one day and she said, "Mr. Jeter, would you be interested in working with the state of Connecticut within the Department of Corrections?" And I said to her, you know, in the back of my, "There's no way that's going to happen, ma'am. I don't think you understand," because she didn't know my history and my record and things of that nature. But she was just taken back and at all that how the young men and older men would gravitate to me when I would facilitate these groups and could relate. And she stated, "You're so relatable." So I wasn't thinking about it. I was just more so just nonprofit running around and doing those things. And then ultimately, she said, "When a position is posted, I want you to apply for it." That was maybe about 2 years in the making. But in the process of those 2 years, I applied for my pardon. This was a time when you had to go in front of a 3-board panel. I completed my pardon application all on my own. No attorney fees, no nothing. Sat down again. The education that was installed in me. Sat down at the dining room table, completed it, submitted it, because I know they say if you got an I missing or a T not crossed, they're going to reject it, and it's a whole other 6-month process. That's how it used to be. But the good thing is, again, I was able to do it, complete it, submit it. It went forward, moved in, and I got a date. I stood up before that 3-board panel, and they asked me a bunch of questions about where I stood, where I was doing, what I was going into, and I think they were impressed with how I reinvented myself after being released from incarceration. Although they were playing chess without any facial expressions, they stated to me, "Okay, Mr. Jeter," after the hearing, they said, "You'll receive a letter in the mail." Jose, I got to say, that was the longest anxiety, waiting, et cetera, not knowing what was going on, what was happening. And maybe about a good, I'd say, 7 months later, the letter came in the mail. Sat at my dining room table, opened the mail, and it stated the state of Connecticut has awarded you a full pardon. At that moment, me and my wife just broke down and cried in that dining room table. And I used that as a sign to say God is clearing the way for you to get back into this prison system and show others what is possible. And I also, again, consciously heard my grandmother say with the education piece, "You want to change things." Her and my grandfather, "You want to change things. You get involved. You can speak all day on the outside, but if you want to change it, you get involved and change it from the inside out." And that's what I've been doing for the last 12 years, going in these prison systems on a daily basis, showing individuals that if I can do this, you can too, with the proper support and the proper drive and wanting it yourself to change.
We don't want to glorify because people don't understand that this is a luck of the draw. It's like winning a lottery ticket to be able to come back out and rectify your situation. It's a difficult and arduous road. I don't want youth out there thinking that it's okay to go and make mistakes.
No, not at all.
Because it's not easy to do, or it's part work and part luck. I mean, you got to be in the right place at the right time with the right skills, prepared to take advantage of the opportunity. Absolutely. What advice would you give to a young man out there that is in these streets, that is succumbing to the allure of the fast cash, fast money, fast life?
It's interesting that you say that, because what I've noticed lately in society with the invention of these smartphones, may God bless Steve Jobs, but he invented something that's a gift and a curse. And if you're not aware of these gadgets and how you're exposed to so much, you can find yourself being a part of, how you say, the sheep and just following. And I'm going somewhere with that, because what I noticed lately is your local rappers, individuals who might be ball players, et cetera, are now being put on a pedestal in a sense, right? Getting podcasts, Welcome Home, Max B, so on and so forth, et cetera. And you're seeing these individuals just running around, making money, so on and so forth. But what they're not telling you is what I had to survive during those 20 years, what I had to survive during those 17 years, when I was dark and alone, and there was no fan base or no following, when I'm seeing individuals lose their lives over 55-cent soups and card games. And what they're not telling you is about is your family members who suffer as well when you're incarcerated for those 4 or 5 years that I was away and not being able to be a father, not being able to be a son, not being able to be connected, missing Christmases, Thanksgivings, etc. That pain is what they're not telling you. So do not fall victim to the illusion that's being put out there that it's okay to go and lay down and do 10, 15, 20 years and come home. Everybody, like you said, luck of the draw is not always that way. We lose so many individuals because they may think, okay, I could go do this 5, 10 years, get back, get out, get back on my feet. Some individuals don't even make it home. They lose their lives in these prison systems. Some individuals lose their mental awareness, mental cognition in these institutions. And some individuals just give up. I also see individuals become institutionalized where they find themselves in a revolving door doing this bid, another bid, another bid. And before you look up and know it, you're 60-something years old and you spent half your life in the prison system. So I say all that to say this. Do not think it's okay to go serve this time because of what you're seeing being glorified in the palm of your hand. If you really want to know what's going on, sit down with an individual who came over and ask them what they went through and what they had to survive to get back home to society and their loved ones. And it will change your mind and your thought process about the activities that can land you there.
We're nearing the end of our conversation. I appreciate your time. Is there a way we can get in contact with you or any organization that's associated with you?
Well, unfortunately, because I'm with the State and Department of Corrections, with okay. the privacy things and stuff like that, we are not really, allowed to really social media and things like that.
So we'll leave it at that.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
But you're there serving the community. You are an example of it is possible to turn around, but don't even get into the position of turning around.
Yeah, try to avoid those pitfalls by any means necessary. And again, educate yourself, man. It will take you a long way in life. And in today's day and time, in 2026, we are seeing right now with the changes that are going on in society, that a trade, that some type of education is the only way you're really going to survive moving forward. How do young people say, the game is done.
Mm. Before we go, I mean, there's one of those things. That's one of those things that in our generation, because we're about the same age, there was a such thing as the game. There was profitability in the drug game, but that doesn't exist anymore. I don't think people understand that there's no way you're going to be a successful business person in anything that's illegitimate in society right now.
And if you are, it's just a matter of time. There's cameras everywhere. There's drones everywhere. Your phone is tracking you. You're being watched 24/7. So although you may think you're getting away with it for a period of time, it's just a matter of time before your walls come closing in on you.
This has been the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. This is Gerard Jeter, one of the Great Eight Hall of Change inductees for 2025. Sir, thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me.
And to those people out there listening right now, still in their cars, like always, thank you for listening.